He's hungry?
Yeah,
I think
he's looking at food.
Oh, yeah, he just licked his chops.
How do we ever know what animals are thinking? I mean, when you see a lion smack its lips while staring at a toddler, you can make a pretty educated guess. But it's a lot harder with an animal that's completely unlike us. For instance, consider the octopus, one of the weirder creatures on the planet. It has no bones, it can shapeshift at will, and as biologists have discovered fairly recently, it's also highly intelligent. But the octopus brain is so alien. Most of its neurons are in its arms, not its head. So how does an octopus think? Well, the Australian philosopher Peter Godfrey Smith lives in Sydney, where the ocean is full of cephalopods. And he told Steve Paulson that encountering some of them in the wild was such a remarkable experience, it led him to reconsider the nature of consciousness.
The encounter with the cephalopods and the octopus in particular really came about, in a sense, partly by chance. I was beginning to spend more and more time just swimming in the ocean, snorkeling, scuba diving, especially around Sydney. And I began to think of them as just the most intriguing things I was seeing in the sea.
Was there a particular first encounter that got you hooked on these creatures?
There was, in a sense. The things that I think of as the first encounters that really stay with me were not with octopuses, but with their relatives, the giant cuttlefish, which grows to about 3 feet long, quite a big animal. And there's two things about them which are truly remarkable. One is the ability to change color. They can produce pretty much any color in less than a second. Their skin is a continually changing screen of patterns and colors.
Why do they change color?
Well, no one really knows. Was probably initially for camouflage. So it's at some point in the distant past, cephalopods gave up their external shells and they had to then avoid being eaten by means of wiles and camouflage. So for example, you might change color to startle a predator, startle it enough that you can make an escape. The story sometimes told is that they produce very strange color patterns while they're hunting small animals and seem to sort of mesmerize them with the sheer repetitive strangeness of the colors.
Now, you said there were two extraordinary things about the cuttlefish.
That's,
so what's the other one?
The experiences that got me particularly interested in these animals often involve situations where I would come across one of these animals. And you should picture this, again, it's a big animal, 2 or 3 feet long, with a skin like a television screen and arms a bit like octopus arms, 8 of them coming out of the front of its head. It's a surprising thing to see in the sea.
Right.
And they too seem to find us in many cases as a surprising and noteworthy thing. In some cases, they'll sort of come close and peer at you. They certainly won't run away in many cases. I mean, in a lot of situations where they have every opportunity, if they were scared, to flee, they don't. They just sort of hover and look at you. In a couple of cases, I've reached out a single arm to them and they've... It's subtle, this behavior. It's not that they sort of obviously reach out an arm and shake hands or anything like that, but they nudge forward an arm to sort of gently touch mine. I don't really understand why they aren't more wary. I think they're genuinely curious about us in a way that a great many wild animals are not.
What I've read about octopuses, sometimes they will, the friendly ones, will grab your hand and it's sort of like they're sucking on you. They're tasting you.
That's what they're doing. That's the right word. They are tasting you, right? So octopuses in particular, I think this is more an octopus behavior than a cuttlefish or a squid behavior, right? They'll reach out an arm and their suckers will attach. They'll touch you. And all of those suckers contain a variety of sensory organs, but in particular, they can taste everything that they touch. If you're in an aquarium situation and you've used particular soaps or deodorants or something like that, you should think of those as, when an octopus touches you, as extremely strong stimuli, as making a big difference to how you come across to them. This is one of several ways in which their sensory world is just completely extraordinary.
I want to back up for a moment, just get a basic sense of how smart an octopus is. What can an octopus do that might surprise us?
They do things, especially in captivity, that are often very surprising. Octopuses have, in several cases, learnt to turn out the lights in the laboratory. They learn to squirt water at the bulb, which will short-circuit the light. And they also squirt water at anything they don't like.
Including people, right?
Including people, right. If they don't like
you. I mean, they can recognize people, and for those that maybe they don't like for whatever reason, they'll squirt those people.
That's right. I think that's been seen quite often now. They can learn to remember individual people. So even if the people are wearing very similar clothes, so there's no obvious cues, the octopus can work out who it's dealing with, and it will behave differently to people who've been nice to it than it will to people who have not been nice to it.
Aren't there also some kind of remarkable stories of escape?
They're very good escape artists. That's absolutely for sure. And I think of that as a consequence of several things. One is their sheer strength. It's very hard to put enough weight on the lid of an octopus tank that will really keep the octopus inside the tank. They're surprisingly strong animals and often determined to get out if they possibly can.
So there are stories of octopuses that manage to get out of their tank and they go crawling off, I don't know, trying to get back to the sea or whatever?
Yeah, yeah, they do. I mean, I've seen that myself. If you have an octopus which you're looking at carefully in a bucket or a tank or something, but where there's no lid, so you have to keep an eye on it, if you turn your back for a minute, it's gone.
They're watching you to see when you look away.
That's right. So if you turn your back and then turn again, you'll often see an octopus walking quietly across the floor.
Now, there's one other thing that's truly remarkable about the octopus. Actually, aren't more of the neurons in the arms, the tentacles, than in the brain?
That's right. That's perhaps the biggest surprise. No one really knows, you know, exactly how many neurons an octopus has. The usual figure that people give is about 500 million, which is a lot, certainly larger than any other invertebrate animal. Two-thirds of those are not in the head between the eyes in that usual area we think of as the brain area in an animal. Two-thirds of them are scattered through the arms, especially in the upper part of the arms. The whole body is a big control system. It's not the case that you have a kind of a CEO, a kind of executive part of the nervous system in the head telling the rest of the body what to do. You should think of the whole animal as its own controller, in a quite different sense than you might apply to us.
So what does that mean, that the arms are not just taking dictation from the brain? Are you saying that the tentacles sort of operate autonomously in some sense?
I think the picture that's emerging is, you might say, semi-autonomously or partially autonomously, with some autonomy. There's a kind of mixture of control. The arms have a kind of exploratory capacity. If you watch an octopus behaving normally, you often see that the animal might seem to be focusing on some particular thing, but one or two arms might just be roaming around in a way that I think probably is largely self-directed.
It raises so many fascinating questions, what you're saying. I mean, like, I'm wondering, does an octopus have a sense of self, or does it have multiple selves? Is there kind of a self in the arms and a different self in the brain?
One possible view is that once you get the sort of partial breakdown of centralization, the whole notion of a single self just dissolves to some extent. And I think octopuses certainly have experiences. I think it feels like something to be an octopus. When we have experiences, there's a sort of unity to the thing that has the experiences. In the case of the octopus, it may be that that's not quite the right model. I doubt that the right model or the right picture is one in which each arm is its own little self, its own little center of experience. But how we should compare them to the sort of experience that we have, I think it's a very difficult question.
And the reason why you're asking this question is the octopus is very smart, and yet it has a totally different evolutionary history than our closest relatives, mammals, most famously chimpanzees, and even birds. We know that certain birds like parrots and crows can be very smart, but they are also much more closely related to us than the octopus. The octopus has a completely different history.
That's right. There's a big idea here. There's a big fact. The common ancestor of us and these animals lived a very long time ago, probably about 600 million years ago, right back in the quite early stages in the history of animal life. And that branching was so deep in time that you really have a second evolutionary experiment. What does evolution do when it builds an animal with a big nervous system, with a brain that's quite substantial, with quite complex behaviors? Do you get the same thing twice? Do you get something completely different? Do you get something that's unrecognizable because it's so different? You can think of mammals and birds as themselves two little experiments in what you get in evolution when you make a smart animal. But you should think of vertebrates in general and cephalopods as two separate experiments in a much deeper sense.
That's philosopher Peter Godfrey-Smith talking with Steve Paulson about his book Other Minds, The Octopus, the Sea, and the Deep Origins of Consciousness.